So we're going to do questions for the goo, and I'm going to walk around and play Oprah in this thing. And you get some sober light, and you get some sober light. So if anybody's got a question, raise your hand. I'll bring the mic over to you, and we can grill the goo today in the open space. Is there a question there, sir? Behind you.
Yo, sure.
I wanted to ask about when are you going to bring in webcam and microphone support and support?
Yeah. You hear me okay? Well, webcam and microphone support, as well as more advanced printing support, are going to have three of the probably the top features that we're planning on for the release after Silverlight 3, or sometime or some update shortly after, or some update after Silverlight 3. We actually do have people already working on those features. So it is definitely part of our roadmap. They didn't quite fit in the initial Silverlight 3 release, but it definitely those are definitely coming.
Yeah, hang on.
Can we get the, as a developer, can we get the your vision, right, and pre-release it so that we can incorporate it early because our customers are asking for it, okay?
Yeah. Well, that's one reason. There's a few features here that I think my team's been talking about that we have transparent on in this release, but we do actually plan in the following release. I don't have a full list of those features right now that we're talking about, but I know webcam microphone in particular are two that we're definitely talking about now, and that hopefully be here in the not too distant future that you can take advantage of.
Perfect. Got a question right here.
What's the status on Silverlight Mobile?
Yeah, we didn't talk about Silverlight Mobile much, or maybe not at all, actually, in the keynote yesterday. We're definitely working hard on Silverlight Mobile. You know, for those that weren't here last year, kind of our plan with Silverlight Mobile is to enable the same Silverlight Portrait model on mobile devices as on the desktop. So it's not a subset Portrait model, it is the same Portrait model. You can actually write it up once and run it in both places. And we're working to support multiple mobile operating systems. So we announced last year Symbian support with Nokia, and also Windows Mobile. Right now we have a private beta for Silverlight Mobile. A lot of the timelines also for Silverlight Mobile, for mobile releases, tend to be dictated less by us and more by handset manufacturers, carriers, things like that. So that's partly why we haven't done a broad beta. But we do have a private beta with about 100 customers right now that are building apps with it. So it's definitely absolutely still part of our core roadmap.
I have a very, sorry, a little bit of a personal question.
Sure.
thank you. I had a recently worked on a project, I think it was about a year ago, where we shot you and Anders walking around your t-shirts. Did you ever get a chance to see the final product of that?
I never actually got a URL to it, so I'd love to see it sometime.
It's up on my blog. I'll send it. Send it somewhere. I don't know. Okay.
It was a cool video shoot where Anders Heilsberg and I walk around, and it was something superimposed. So we didn't actually have to say anything, so it was just superimposed. So it was really like a 3-hour one-on-one. You know, just wandering around. That was actually fun. I'd love to see the final result.
Hi, this is a more technical question. You know all the nice things you talked about in Silverlight 3 where you check the dirty bits and send it over. If your backend is not in ASP.NET, is that you are planning to make it available publicly so that developers can implement deserialization and figure out what has changed, or it will be proprietary?
Good question. So the question is basically, when I was in the keynote, when we did the data work, and we had kind of the data form, and I showed how you treat the data, we worked with the data, and pushed the data back, and all the kind of chain tracking and dirty bits. Kind of what was happening under the covers, does it require ASP.NET on the back end? Could you plug in, say, Java or PHP back end? The wire protocol that we support in the beta today is JSON bits, right? Awesome, yeah. So the bits today are using JSON. We're looking to enable and kind of layer that on top of the ASP.NET data services work that's already in Silverlight, which is a REST-based protocol now. And so you should be able to, the protocol will be fully documented. And so yeah, in theory you should absolutely be able to build a Java or PHP or any other implementation back in order to do that.
Okay, next question.
I should also mention that the server-side piece that we're building with ASP.NET, the change tracking, things like that. We're looking to enable not just for Silverlight clients, but also probably expose an AJAX library front end. So you can also take advantage of the server programming model from a client-side JavaScript library as well.
Hey, Zach. Two questions. First, can you talk a little bit about your thoughts around device connectivity through Silverlight, the way that looks in the future, and also OS integration, like more advanced stuff? And also, one of the hesitations we've had with Silverlight to this date has been sort of a competitor to BlazeDS or Lifecycle Data Services on the Flex side. Are there any plans that you have for some sort of a data service provider for Silverlight?
Sure. Yeah, so two parts of the question. The first question was around kind of device integration. And so specifically, you know, webcam and microphone are probably the two most common ones that we hear people ask about. And so those are definitely coming as part of our roadmap. We are also looking at, and I suspect at some point we'll enable the ability to kind of call into kind of, you know, and we were trying to figure out exactly what it is, but is it, you know, do we allow you to call and say that we have two APIs? And that would be an explicit, you know, that would only work on a platform that had B3.2. And it would obviously need to be fully trusted in that scenario. That's something that we've looked at, and that would allow you to do, you know, barcode readers and other types of scenarios. You can do that.
Go ahead and repeat the question again.
The question was basically around device integration and what are the opportunities there. One of the things that we do have with Silverlight 3 today that you can take advantage of is something we call local connection support, which is actually not sockets, but it's a nameplate connection. And so you can actually, in a Silverlight application, talk to another application on the machine or to another Silverlight application running inside the browser. And so if you did want to enable a barcode scenario, what you could do is you could build a little service that is actually doing the barcode part and then have your Silverlight application talk to it. That'd be more for like an embedded scenario, like a kiosk. That enables some interesting things. If you thought about it, cool, if you have a messaging client that's running, you could build it in the browser, sort of like control, like talk against the messaging client, you can create a site, things like that. So that's actually in shipping Silverlight 3 bits today. And then for a variety of advertising scenarios, we think it's interesting to have multiple Silverlight apps running on the same page to be able to talk to each other. And that also is enabled in Silverlight 3 bits this week. And there should be some SDK samples that try to do that. A cool sample, I think it's in the SDK, where it launches four different browser windows, and then there's a ball that kind of goes between them. It's four separate browser instances, we're all coordinated, and it's kind of a fun sample. Your second question was around data services and kind of the equivalent of kind of a Blaze data container support. The .NET RIA services I talked a little bit about in my keynote yesterday, and which you get bids on today. Provide a lot of that, basically that support in terms of change tracking, in terms of requesting data. It's designed so that it works with any data provider on the back end. So you could use identities like SQL and Hibernate. We support POCO, plain old CLR objects as a programming model. So we think that actually provides a really good model. We also are supporting, we have a better support in Silverlight 3, what we call duplex communication. Basically, with the duplex communication, you can actually push the change from the server to the client. And we have some project templates that I don't think are in the beta, you can download, and it'll be in the final release, that make building duplex services much easier. And we also have binary XML. So you can actually shrink down the payload size of your network.
Information or some details about what the install base is on.
One is, are there compelling sites that are using it in that particular geo? The U.S., the Olympics, March Madness, at CBS is being streamed live right now in Silverlight. I just heard some numbers from someone earlier that was saying that we're doing half a million new Silverlight installs per hour right now.
Per hour?
Something like that.
Not a day.
I heard the per minute number, so I'm trying to do the math in my head, but it was a nice number. If you go to YouTube right now, there's a link to it. So events like that tend to pop at deployment numbers in certain countries. In the UK, BCIB, ITV, and a bunch of other projects are there. Countries that don't have a big event or have a big site that's already built in Silverlight, their numbers are a little bit lower. So it really depends on the country. But in general, I'd say what we're seeing is on average, we're increasing worldwide by probably 2 to 3 to 4 points per month. I think last PDC we announced 24 worldwide. We feel pretty good in terms of the rate is steadily increasing. The other thing that we're doing is we are working with OEMs as well as people that install software and have Silverlight be included as part of that release. So, Silverlight's not built into Windows, but starting this spring, most Windows machines will come pre-installed with Silverlight done by the manufacturer. That also is what will continue to drive adoption. Our expectation has always been the first 25% is the hardest because you're going from 0 to 25. As more incoming content gets out there, people feel more comfortable building new Silverlight apps, which means there's more content and the rate accelerates. I think we're starting to see that curve happen now. In terms of when Silverlight 3 does come out, we will, by default, automatically update people to Silverlight that have Silverlight 1 and Silverlight 2 to it. We use Microsoft Update to do that, which is the standard Microsoft servicing mechanism. In general, when we release a patch on there, we see about 80% update within about 10 days worldwide. So we do expect that the existing Silverlight 1 and Silverlight 2 base will move fairly quickly. People that are not enrolled in Microsoft Update, Silverlight also, for security reasons, checks for updates every week or so, and by default will prompt these without update. My hope is we'll see a fairly fast conversion of existing Silverlight users, and we'll continue to get more and more Silverlight users out there.
Thanks, Scott. My question, having been in the web development market for ages, everyone wants a content management system, everyone wants to manage their own content, all that kind of stuff, and as we move to more Silverlight applications, how are non-technical users manage
their
content within Silverlight?
No, that's a good question. I think there's probably a couple different scenarios. My hope is with Silverlight, that there's more features in terms of to take advantage of in terms of content, media, graphics, things like that. But the fundamentals, I think, of how a CMS system will work with Silverlight will probably be very simple. There'll be a backend database or a backend file system store that actually has the raw data. I do know of a couple of CMS partners that are looking at how to integrate Silverlight as part of their solution, either for displaying the content or often building admin tools to edit the content. I wouldn't be surprised to see solutions like SharePoint or some of the other open source CMS solutions start to incorporate Silverlight in the future.
We got a question back here. Can you hold the mic a little closer?
So we have Silverlight on PC, Mac, coming on mobile. Any chance we could see it on even more devices or hardware such as Xbox 360 and perhaps maybe Media Center? I think particularly on Xbox, that would change. That could be a game changer. That could be something really, really cool.
We thought similar things. I think that it's quite likely you'll see things like that in the future.
Very, very well said, sir.
Hey, Scott. So, with everything coming from business applications and Silverlight, and
the installation being super easy to get the individual apps out. What role do you see WPF playing in business applications in the future, or is it going to be more just for surface and really high-end experiences?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of people, ask questions or get confused around that specific topic, which is Silverlight WPF, what's the relation between the two? When do I use one versus the other? You know, when we started the Silverlight project, one of the core things that we said was, we don't want to create something completely different. We want it to be part of this broader family we call WPF. And there is the WPF that exists as part of the .NET framework, and the programming model in Silverlight, we've gone to kind of great pains to try to make sure it is a subset of that full programming model that's in the .NET framework. And, as you look from release to release to release, every release, I'd say the programming model in many ways is getting closer. There's things like merge resource dictionaries, or things like writable bitmap, or there's things like inherited styles, or there's things like some of the validation binding work that didn't exist in Silverlight 2 that now exists in Silverlight 3. And you're going to continue to see that happen in the future as more features kind of come there. And likewise, the features we add in Silverlight, like the Visual State Manager, we're adding into the full WPF as well. And things like the Silverlight Control Toolkit now are built in such a way that we actually have a single tree, single solution, and we basically compile for both WPF on .NET Framework and compile for Silverlight. And there's a few ifdefs, but those ifdefs are tending to get smaller and smaller as the releases progress. What that hopefully means is, as a developer, you can learn programming on, and you can use it to build applications that run in the browser with Silverlight. You can use it to build out of the browser Silverlight applications that run for media scenarios or sandbox scenarios or companion app scenarios or data snacking scenarios. You can use WPF for building full Windows client apps, Surface apps, etc. I think where there is, I think, a gray area is I'll call it data, forms over data type scenarios where you're doing data input, data entry, primarily with the application, you're doing basic charting as opposed to kind of full 3D data analysis. You can use either WPF or Silverlight. WPF still today does have a number of features that Silverlight doesn't have for that scenario. I mentioned some of them, advanced printing. Like some of the richer text scenarios aren't there in Silverlight yet. We do plan to add a lot of those features to Silverlight. At the end of the day, I think a lot of it will depend on, at the same time, there will be features in Silverlight that we won't add, primarily for security and deployment reasons, in terms of super deep OS integration. Right now, I don't think that'll, that's something where if you want to build a full Windows client app, we think WPF is the right answer. But if what you're doing is providing basic forms over data, scenarios, and charting scenarios, you want to run it in the browser, and you want to maybe have it be persistent out of the browser point. Silverlight, I think in the future, will be a great option for that. The key thing, though, is regardless of whether you start with Silverlight or you start with WPF, the tools, the APIs, the XAML, the controls, the technologies, having the consistency means that you always have the ability, to update it to be a full WPF app. And, it's harder to go from superset to subset, but, be able to actually take it from a full WPF app and build a web experience as well. That answer a little bit? Yeah. We're going to try to get more prescriptive in terms of guidance and be able to provide more details in terms of which bucket. I think that is one good feedback, which is we need to be more clear and prescriptive. That is something we're going to focus on.
I had a couple of questions. One is about Silverlight Streaming Service. When you guys plan to release to production, and do you think there are going to be any changes in the terms and conditions, storage space, allowed, or pricing, etc.? And second question was, can I take a picture with you?
Sure. The answer to that question is yes. Regarding the Silverlight Streaming Service, I need to follow up. I don't actually know the final update on that. Send me mail, I can try to find out that.
We can do pictures afterwards.
Sure, pictures afterwards, yeah.
All right.
All right, go ahead. And this gentleman, I think, had a question. Grant, you had a question.
Are there going to be any speed improvements in BS 2009 for John release 2010?
So the question is, are there going to be any speed improvements to 2008?
Just editor-wise, Visual Studio is always busy.
Well, we have a couple of, things I typically recommend is, one, make sure you're running SPL, and then there's a few hot fixes that you can search for. If you send me mail afterwards, or just we can chat afterwards, oftentimes what we see when the editor is busy is either sometimes there is a combination of other software on the system that's causing a problem, whether it's sometimes we see a few antivirus programs, a few plugins, or add-ins in the environment. So that might or might not be what's causing it, but send me mail, we can follow up and figure out exactly what's busy and how to prevent that.
Are there any guidance as to how to build a new Silverlight app? Like, should it be complete UI is built using Silverlight, or there are sections of application that go into Silverlight? Like, Flex or Flash specifically provides such guidance. So, does Microsoft recommend how you should build it, or it is built it as you like?
It's a good question. I think in terms of guidance, we have lots of documentation. I'm not sure if we have specific guidance as to in a formal way, basically say, here's a scenario, you should do this here, this there. We definitely do have HTML interop APIs and JavaScript interop APIs with Silverlight. So you can have much of your site be HTML, you can have pockets be Silverlight. And with a local connection feature, you can now have those pockets of Silverlight within your app talk to each other, which is something you couldn't do in Silverlight 2. In terms of formal guidance, I don't know. It's a good follow-up.
And another question.
Someone should take a note. We should get good guidance there.
Regarding the design of Silverlight 3, is it like based on Silverlight 2, or you have refactored the whole stack? So should we retest everything if you have done something in Silverlight 2, or we can assume all that stuff?
Oh yeah, it's the same code base, so we've added features to the code base. Our assumption is Silverlight 2 apps should work on Silverlight 3 as is, without having to make any changes. Please do test your app with the beta, and send us feedback. Or go to Connect and open a bug. If you find that isn't the case, anytime you rev a product, there are inadvertent breaking changes that you introduce. Our goal is zero breaking changes. So if you find one, it's a bug, and if you give us details, we can fix it.
And Tim Hewer, one of our Silverlight community liaisons, just commented that the Prism Patterns and Practices project provides some guidance for doing composite applications using WPF XAML pattern. You can just search for Prism, PRISM, and Silverlight, and there's some pretty rich guidance there right now in Silverlight, and we'll try to get more up there. More questions? I have a question, sir.
Sure.
We got HTML5 coming, things are moving fast. 5 years ago seemed like a really long time. I mean, 2003, 2004, what were we doing? We were, ASP.NET 1.1. Where do you see things happening in the next 5 years? 2014, what does the web look like?
That's a good question. I think, I'd say one of the things that is always worth, especially, I think one of the reasons why I think software is fun is it really is moving at the pace of light. And so you do think back to what the web was like 5 years ago versus now. Ajax really wasn't even, I don't think, coined until 2004, late 2004. It's hard to imagine a world where, we don't have all the things that we're doing now. I think a couple of the trends that are going to continue to accelerate. One is more and more connectivity. Devices obviously is going to be huge. The percentage of time in our day that we're not somehow connected to the internet will probably continue to decline. Planes will probably have internet access.
I wonder if hotels will have internet access in the future.
I think the future's bright, but I think that might be hoping that that's a little too sci-fi there. I actually found the hotel once I could actually get an IP address. It actually works pretty well, but I had to call the IT staff to get an IP address.
When you call the IT staff, I need to understand this, when you call them and you talk to the tech support guy, you just say, "Hi, it's Scott Goo," and you immediately take to second level support.
No. I just say.
Is he like, okay, go to the start menu and type CMD? Okay. They even have FizzBin. Nothing even happens to the goo. Okay, we got a question right here.
With the Silverlight data services, the applications we saw yesterday, everything was in a single solution. For larger scale applications where there are 400 or 500 forms, is there any thought to start to break that so that we can separate the shared code into two separate solutions from a scaling perspective?
Yeah, definitely. So the question is about the redundant RIA services, and specifically where it's creating a client-side proxy. You know, is there a way that you can go ahead and have a common, a common library that then multiple UI libraries consume, so you don't get conflicting references? That's definitely something we'll enable. Austin is still here. Might actually be supported already in the beta, but if it's not supported in the beta, I know it is something that we're definitely enabling. Gil or Austin or some of the folks from that team should be able to tell you right now whether or not that's already supported. But I know I've sat in a design review where we talk about it being supported, so I know it's either going to be supported or it's supported now.
Can you say anything about the relationship between the XAML editor and Visual Studio and the one-on-ones?
Sure.
I mean, it's a little confusing to some people where they say that they find different experiences in editing, and when should I switch over to Blend for my XAML, and when should I spend time in Visual Studio?
Sure. I mean, okay, there's two aspects. One is the actual editor itself in Blend is actually an early version of the editor that will ship in VS 2010. And so the 2010 has a new text editor. It is built entirely in WPF. And Blend was actually the first product to ship it, an early version of it. There's more features we're adding to it. In terms of XAML editing services, we are looking to share the code between the two. Blend 2 did not have IntelliSense on the XAML markup, and there was no way to do IntelliSense in the VB and C# code line. Blend 3 is adding those features. In addition to TFS source control support. So in terms of where you spend your time in VS versus Blend, I think increasingly you're going to see a lot of time that you can spend a lot of your time in Blend for all your UI work and have that be a good experience. I think what we'd ideally like to do is avoid the need to constantly context switch between the two. If you're someone who's primarily doing backend development or the classic code development, VS would be a great place to be. If you still want to do UI, you can also do that inside VS. If you're someone who's doing front-end development, you can primarily stay in Blend. You can write code in Blend, and you don't have to context switch between the two.
At PDC, you talked about the three stages. There's the desktop, browser, and mobile phone. But then not much was said about the mobile phone. And again, here at Mix, we're talking about the web and in a browser. Where's Microsoft with the mobile phone? Where's all the discussion of, Windows 6.5 or Windows 7?
In terms of the mobile side, in terms of Windows Mobile in particular, we're shipping Windows Mobile 6.5 later this year, that we announced a couple weeks ago. That does include an updated version of IE. So that does include, I think, IE 6 or 7. You're going to continue to see us make significant improvements to Windows Mobile. Silverlight will run on Windows Mobile in the future. That's kind of our published roadmap. We have work to do in the mobile space, definitely rest assured we're spending a lot of time trying to make sure we do a lot of work in that space. Right now, we didn't feel for Mix that we had something new beyond the 6.5 plans that we could have announced at our mobile conference a couple weeks ago to share. And so that's partly why we didn't have any new kind of big announcements. But our existing roadmap in terms of 6.5 support, as well as the browser support and our Silverlight mobile support, it is the same. It has not changed.
Do you have another question here in the middle?
I was just wondering, what did you guys choose name types for the communication mechanism that being used by application as compared to other network mechanisms?
Good question. So the question was, why did we choose name pipes for doing app-to-app communication. We have multiple Silverlight app instances in a single browser, or you have an out-of-the-browser Silverlight app talking to an in-browser Silverlight app. Basically, we try to do a couple things. One is we want to make sure whatever we created, we chose was secure. The nice thing about main pipes is you can't access it off the machine. And so it is specific just to that machine. Whereas with sockets, even if there's a slight concern that you can spoof a socket that's listening, and we kind of didn't want to have Silverlight have a socket listener built in, just because if, God forbid, there was a security hole, you could do a lot of damage with that. And so main pipes allowed us to do that. The other mechanism we kind of wanted to do was with the main pipes approach is basically provide a very simple serialization format. And so we basically use strings to communicate between the main pipes, which means that if you want to serialize to XML, if you want to serialize to binary and code it as a string, you can do that. So we just found it to be flexible, fairly fast, and secure.
When someone is hosting, when someone's talking about a browser or they're hosting something within another application, they refer to the outside part as the Chrome, the browser Chrome, the application Chrome. Can you talk a little bit about Silverlight 3 and the relationship that Silverlight, as we understand it, has with that outer Chrome? What is that? What can we do with it? Can we change? Can we rearrange regions? What is the relationship between Silverlight 3 and the Chrome?
Just to talk about the outer browser.
Yes, the outer browser experience in Silverlight 3 and the relationship specifically between the host, the whatever.exe, the foo.exe, and Silverlight 3 and that relationship.
Yeah. For out of the browser Silverlight apps today, we don't provide that much customization for the outer Chrome. Basically, we have a window that doesn't have any Silverlight branding on it. So what you can control is you control the icon, you control the name of the window, the title that shows up. We don't allow you to do custom context menus on the window or any regular shape windows. That's something we will support in the future, but probably not in the first Silverlight 3 release. We are going to support the ability so you can control the initial size of the window. That's something that's not in the beta, but will be for the final release. And I think one of the other things that we're looking at is can we allow you to programmatically resize the window. That also isn't in the beta, but that's something we're considering for the final release. In terms of other support, I think we're also looking at can you provide like a flash message window, not flash, just
bubble help.
Yeah.
Toast.
I'm not sure if it's going to be toast, but it might be like you can cause the window to blink so that if it's in the status bar, you can see something.
Needy windows is what that's called.
Oh, is that what's
when called? An application in the task bar is letting you know it needs something, it's called a needy window.
The other thing that we will provide is built-in support on Win 7 so you can, it's called pinning an application to the taskbar, and that will be supported.
Now, I know that there are other out-of-browser solutions. Can you talk about the sandboxing relationship? I mean, when you run something as whatever.exe and Silverlight's in there, can I just go wild and start formatting disks?
No, that's actually one of the features that people are using the microphone cutting out.
Your microphone is a little bit quieter, and you're holding it a little bit further away.
Yeah, eat the mic.
Eat the mic. Okay. One of the things that we try to do with Silverlight, on that sense of fact, one of the things that we have already is with WPF a great way to build fully immersive applications that can do pretty much anything on a machine. Hardware access, deep shell integration, deep office integration, etc. So we kind of already had what we kind of thought of as the super premium thing that lets you do everything. The challenge with allowing running apps that can do everything, though, of course, is security. And, when you go to a site, even a big site, that is sort of something you naturally would trust, you're sometimes hesitant to say, I want to install a client application. I don't know what it's doing. Is this different registry entries that are going to dirty my machine, etc. One of the things we try to explicitly do with Silverlight out of the browser support is to say, it is, and if that's for a big site, for a little site, or a less well-known Silverlight brand, they're, at least from my perspective, I'm super paranoid about allowing them to install anything. So what we try to do with Silverlight 3 is basically have a security model where things run sandboxed, even when running outside the browser, so that you don't have to, as an end user, have to be prompted with a security dialog that's going to say, this thing could eat your machine. Which is something that air apps are often criticized for in terms of that security experience. That causes a lot of people to pause to hit OK, That's the same thing when you're running installing a full .NET Trust app. There's also people sometimes hesitate about hitting OK. And instead, what we want to try to do is have the install experience basically feel a little bit like adding a favorite. And you should be able to trust it like you add a favorite. The difference is instead of adding a favorite to the browser, you're adding a favorite to either your desktop or your smartphone. And you know, I think a lot of people with the KEXP demo yesterday might have missed the fact that at the very beginning when he clicked on it and said, oh yeah, I had a favorite to my start read on the desktop, he was installing the application. It almost kind of felt like just something built into the site. That's the kind of end user experience we want to enable.
The idea that I could have some functionality on my site and someone's going to tear that off, put that over here, and make that a part of my life.
We think that's good for consumers to keep them safe, but it's also really good for site authors, especially for people that don't have huge brand names that people are willing to trust to install client software. Because if you just have a cool app, and the user knows it's going to be secure, the chances of the person actually installing it go up by two orders of magnitude.
That's cool. I like that. Adding a favorite. Instead of adding a favorite, you're adding some false. You have a question, sir?
Scott. Thanks, Ben. So back to what you just said about the consumer experience and security and people being worried. Totally understand the sandbox. But when we start moving Silverlight into the enterprise space, I have clients where they're behind a firewall, they want interoperability. If you put thought into sort of splitting things out so there's a consumer experience, and then you can take the risk, you can open things up and allow a corporation to do real custom integration now.
That's kind of the paradox and where the trade-off in terms of keep it secure, but there's a scenario I want to do that, how do I do that? And so we are going to probably, not for Silverlight 3, but probably for another Silverlight in the future, look at, are there options where, potentially an enterprise administrator says, for intranet-based applications, they can do a little bit more, perhaps the user gets prompted to say, hey, this app wants full trust, are you okay with that? And it could be, we're trying to work out the user model for that. It could be, on install we do that. It could be, hey, if you want a certain capability, you could prompt the user. We're trying to figure out to make sure we get what we kind of want to do is have a super simple end user experience. At the same time, also having a lot of power and make sure we get that balance right. I think in the past, we made the mistake of providing too many knobs. And if you offer too many knobs and people build apps where they're twisting the knobs in the wrong direction, you end up causing the sort of bad taste in consumers' mouths. And that's what we're trying to avoid with the other browser experience. Same with the auto-update thing. A lot of people said, hey, it'd be great if you could turn off the ability to auto-update the app. And we thought about that. We sort of said, having a whole bunch of different dials and options means that some user is going to turn something off and get confused. If you don't want to auto-update the app as a developer, just don't copy over the same file on the web server and you're done. Create a separate file with a different name if you want to have a version. But having kind of a simple model that just kind of works, the 90% sweet spot just works by default, and you as a developer don't have to write and install or update logic in order to have it work, we think ultimately hopefully leads to a better user experience.
I went to the Worldwide Telescope Silverlight version, and when I showed up, the first thing it says was very friendly. It was like, I'm going to need more disk space. I need more quota. It told me how much it was going to need, and I said, that seems like a reasonable amount. I'll give you 40 megs to show me the universe. And I click a button, and it just worked. And I thought that was a really great user experience.
That's something that the full .NET framework for client apps, I think we've been rightly criticized in the past of not focusing enough on that deployment experience. That's something we are adding to client applications in the full .NET framework. The .NET 4 makes that a lot better, but having that initial consumer experience just work and have it work well, and guiding developers to deliver a good experience along those lines, it's definitely something we're doing with the full .NET framework. And I think that's one advantage that Silverlight has today is we've sort of thought through that experience from the very beginning.
So you kept the runtime down pretty small, you can bring in the out-of-browser experience. So I'm curious, technically, how did you do out-of-browser? Are you hosting another browser, or did you basically recreate a browser? Or what's the point? What was the technical solution to that problem?
Built a browser in 15K.
And are there any dependencies?
So what we actually do is we have a custom process host that we do run for the out-of-the-browser. I should say a couple things. One of the things we wanted to do short answer, we have a custom browser process, or a custom process that we run, that we host the application, that reads the manifest, and figures out what Solarite app to run. And then within that, we do host a browser. On Windows, we use IE. On Mac, we use WebKit. And then we host Solarite inside that.
Since we're talking about the standalone version of Solarite, you condensed it over printing there a little while ago. And of course, you use a browser to print reports, things you may have to do enterprise. The browser, what are we going to do? How is the browser experience?
Yeah, one thing I mentioned in terms of printing is one of the things that, today, I'd say, was still like we typically recommend call back to a server and get back a file in HTML or PDF or whatever and use that to print. That's something that in the next release of Solarite, we're going to have an API that explicitly gives you printing support. Today, you kind of end up, I think, a little bit having to work around printing. So that's something that as I mentioned in the roadmap, webcam, microphone, and printing are three things definitely we're looking to make better in the future. That's it. Outside the browser today, probably the best approach is to compose the thing on the server. Make a call, retrieve back a URL, pop open the browser window with that file, and then print using the browser.
Two more questions. One is about the search engine optimization, because now we are doing that and we are zipping it. And the second question is about the support for 2.10 IMP in future. High resolution.
Okay. In terms of SEO support, there's a talk at the conference specifically on SEO, but at a high level, basically in terms of what we're looking to do is as part of the deep linking and navigation framework, allow you to have unique URLs that will be indexed, they will be called separately by search engines. And can be bookmarked, and in a search engine list, you can link to it. Then typically, you can expose them to a search engine in one of two ways. You can build a sitemap so that they can find those URLs and crawl them. And then there's a mechanism where you basically provide, and maybe there's some work that we're doing in ASP.NET to help you automate it, but basically in each of those URLs, you can basically provide to the search engine, an HTML version of your data. So for example, like the Rolling Stone application, what they've done is they have a sitemap. Google will crawl the sitemap and request each of those unique URLs. And then they basically have an ASP.NET page on the back end that lists the Rolling Stone article as HTML. And then that way the search engine will index it. When a user goes to the search engine, types in a comment, types in using a term, finds the URL, clicks it, they'll basically go into the Solarite app. So at a high level, that's how it works. We have controls and stuff in ASP.NET that help you do that.
And that's actually a really interesting question, because a lot of people say, like you said in the middle of your question, you said, well, there's this ZAP file. How is Google going to look at the ZAP file? But remember that the ZAP file, as it sits on the web server, is a static resource. The ZAP file is not what Google cares about. They care about the URL. They're going to ask for the HTTP GETs for whatever they want. Now, it's typically against search engines' terms of service to sniff for Google and give them different stuff. That's not okay to say, I'm going to give you this and you're going to do that. But Google's spider doesn't have Solarite installed. So it is okay to give them a good experience, just as you would give anyone a good experience if you didn't have it installed. So that's the trick of Solarite SEO, is to automatically give them a good experience because they don't have Solarite, then link appropriately.
So all search engines support sitemaps. So what basically is, you post a sitemap that tells the search engine where to crawl. And then what you do is just on each of these URLs, you can think of it in terms of, this is going to yell at me, no interference there, but basically just within the HTML of that page, what you do is, so say someone goes to rollingstone.com/June/08/02/page1, that might be the URL you put in your sitemap, that'll be crawled, and then basically just on the server, you can embed as part of an HTML response the Solarite control, and you can show a please install Solarite if you don't have this installed, and then just you can embed inside the HTML the content of that article,
And that way, you know, from a Google perspective or from a live search or Yahoo perspective, they'll index that and you'll get standard search engines just like you would for static. And then a user hits it with Silverlight, they'll see the Silverlight enhanced version jumped immediately to that particular location, kind of like what Scott Stanfield showed in the keynote yesterday. And then if they don't have Silverlight installed, they'll also see the install Silverlight medallion and be able to click it and immediately run it. So it's a fairly nice way. As Scott mentioned, think of the Zap file kind of like JavaScript libraries. It's not where you put your content. It's not your Zap that you want to be indexed. It's the unique, you know, portion of your application that is what you want to index. We'll have white papers and samples and show how to do all that. And I think there is a talk here Friday that apparently goes into more detail on how to do that. I should just also mention one of the things that because the Rolling Stone site isn't live yet, like we're going to do a cool demo where you can type in a term, and so you can actually see it running through Google. The site that was running live was the Playground Archive, and we decided that was maybe a little too much for the keynote. But I think Scott Stanfield is doing a talk called March Madness and This March, Two Case Studies. And I think he's going to show actually Google integration with the Playboy Archive site as part of that. So it is working. It's something we're not going to probably show in the keynote for that particular site.
First of all, I'm very happy about the Silverlight technology. It's great. I have a question about the competitive landscape. Because there's a great active area in Google, Adobe, some ecosystem, and all trying to make some moves. Have you ever considered something similar to Google's native client technology in Silverlight? In the sense that there are a lot of legacy applications that are written in C, plus C, that somehow won't bring them into the web. Google has this technology. Have you actually considered doing that as well?
In terms of have a solution that takes C++ and converts it.
Google that native client, Google native client.
We've looked at certainly one of the reasons why we use .NET with Silverlight was so that you could take existing .NET code and more easily move it to Silverlight in terms of libraries and things like that. We haven't right now looked at taking C++ code and running it. Primarily because I haven't seen a great solution that's worked super well for doing that. In terms of...
Can I call it ActiveX?
You can do ActiveX, but in terms of transcoding C++ to either JavaScript or to managed byte language, yeah, I've seen demo, but I haven't actually seen a real app that's been able to do that.
The Google native client actually has a sandbox thing on that, so they do it in such a way that even though it's C++, the whole thing is sandbox, just like Silverlight sandbox.
It's interesting.
So you guys are like a box inside of Silverlight? Right, like a whole universe, like command line. I mean, if you say you want an entire environment inside Silverlight. Silverlight is all about enabling great experiences that are written in managed code. So, it doesn't sound like native code in Silverlight is really anywhere that we want to go.
Not right now. It's something we'll keep an eye on. If we do see demand, then we'll certainly look at it.
So I think we have time for one more question, and then we'll wrap it up here. You guys have a couple of questions. Let's hear from somebody quiet and shy in the back who hasn't said anything yet. Any questions for the goo? Your question to you.
I just asked where it took your
eyes. Okay, sure.
All right. Sounds like the number one question here that I asked the goo at the third place at Mix09 is, can we have a picture with the goo? So we should all just basically swarm the stage now, and we'll take pictures as a group. All right, well, thanks, everybody, and let's give Scott Goo a big hand. Cool.